Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Thanks very much for being here. My name, of course, is still Paul Madot. Today, I have Steve Haddock. He is VP Sales at Accelo, coming to us from the Mile High City, Denver. Steve, how are things, man?
Going well. Actually, originally from Kansas City, so it was an exciting night last night with the Final Four championship game.
Yeah, go Jayhawks, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, listen, I will chat about that in a second here. Do me a favor, Steve, say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro, and then let's jump into your episode.
Awesome. Well, yeah, Paul, so Steve Haddock, Vice President of Sales here at Accelo. I've got over 20 plus years in sales, father to three boys that are 8, 10, and 13. So that keeps us busy. So I'm really excited to be here and share some insights.
VP sales, husband, father of three. I know you're stretched, so I appreciate you being here sincerely. And so, Steve, you know, we were talking about the podcast before I hit record, Your Intention Matters, and it's really built on really my foundation that nothing is really given to any of us. And most of us in the world of selling really never thought we'd even get into this arena. I mean, they really, you know, maybe now a little bit, but so much for so when we were back in school, there was no sales degree, there was no, you know, sales courses. And yet here we are, millions and millions of us trying to, you know, carve out a living by carrying a bag. And I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You ready to go?
Hey, I'm ready.
All right, let's get into it then. So we're going back in time with this podcast. Let's go back mid 90s, man. Lots going on in the 90s. We've got America Online, the OJ trial, 90210, Seinfeld. Like, there's all kinds of stuff going on in the 90s. Missouri State University, Bears, Lady Bears. Do I have that right?
Yep, that's right.
All right, good. So mid 90s, let's talk about this. Finance and insurance. Did you have any real vision, Steve, in terms of what you thought you'd be doing, in terms of why you chose that educational path, or were you just kind of a means to an end and figure it out after you're done? And talk to me about where you were at and maybe what your thoughts were when you were getting ready to get out there.
Well, so my father was in the banking industry and moved up through the ranks, was president of three different banks in a small town in central Kansas. And so I always kind of thought like finance was my pathway. I could envision myself as like a stockbroker, you know, living there in New York and the craziness there. And I, you know, had lost my parents at an early age. And so I had to work my way through college. And so I remember had a few sales jobs. I mean, think back to early years. I mean, I was the guy always trying to find a way to make some money, whether it be selling snow ice cream in Minnesota, to selling cinnamon toothpicks, just doing whatever I could. And I've kind of had a job, you know, since I was pretty young. But in college, I recall that I was looking to figure out what I wanted to do and had been in the retail industry doing some sales. And a lot of my fraternity brothers are like, hey, come get a job at MCI, which we sold long distance services. Right. And so I said, well, let's go give it a shot. And I got into MCI, worked there for about 3.5 years and just really enjoyed it. Started being President's Club quarter after quarter after quarter and was like, man, this is fun. I can work really cool hours. There's flexibility. You didn't have to work nights and weekends. And it was just a great overall college job to be in. And so, started there and just really started having success and thought, you know, I did a little bit of interviewing in the insurance industry and just said, you know what, I really like the direction, you know, being in full-time sales and decided to stick with it from there.
You know, Steve, first of all, I want to say condolences to you and your family for losing your parents at such a young age. I'm sure that was, a ripple that obviously you were not expecting and had to navigate through. And so, you know, commend you for being able to get past that. So, and thank you for sharing that on the episode here. And so you talk about your experience with MCI. Did that become a full-time job post MSU?
Yeah. So, while going to school, I ended up moving into a supervisor role and just, that was kind of where some of the leadership skills and everything really started kicking off. And from there, I was really looking to get into outside sales. And for me, as I was graduating college and here, I had 3.5 years experience as a supervisor, top producer, and it was so crazy. I could not get my foot in the door in outside sales. So everyone was like, hey, great that you see this inside sales experience, but you've never sold to businesses and you've never done anything outside. So go get some experience and come back. And we'd love to have you, you know, talk. And so, you know, I'm thinking, Paul, like, well, all right, great. Where do I go for this experience? Right. And
exactly.
No one really had any answers. So luckily through some friends, I was able to get that opportunity to come in there and to prove myself out. And from there, just really kicked it off from there. And so it was, you know, it was very challenging. I still think about it today. Like, how many people are kind of in that same boat where they want to get into sales, but frankly, no one's given them a chance to get in there. And so I think that's one of the things that, as I think about today's sales model, where, you know, we have that SDR mentality where we're taking people fresh out of college. We're looking for people that have got the grind, the grit, the desire, the hunger, and we can teach them all of these sales skills, put them through the sales methodology, teach them the product and turn them loose. But now that's the onboard where you come in as an SDR, you can either get into to leadership. You can go from there. Maybe you take a turn and go into marketing or customer success, or become a high producer in as an AE.
So where did you land to get this experience that they so coveted? Because it's such a funny thing, right? Well, okay, we want a higher experience, but we're not willing to bring you on to give you the experience. So who gave you your shot?
So WorldCom, through a friend of a friend that was the sales manager there, I came on there and you know, they started teaching me the ways, got me the experience, and spent about a year there before getting recruited into another CLEC company. And so that's where it really all began.
So Steve, keep me honest here, but I imagine that when you were in the sales role during your college years, that's a little bit different when you're going through school and you're working at the same time. It's not really your profession. It's not your bread and butter. Your focus is on getting your education and you're working to, you know, have some scratch in your pocket in between and get some experience in a different area. But it's a whole other animal when now all of a sudden this is your job and you're responsible for providing for yourself. Did you take to full-time sales well? Was it harder for you, this new venture? And did you mentally quit a few times? And what was it like early on once this became your full-time gig?
Yeah. So, you know, once I really looked to mentors. So as soon as I got there, really trying to adapt, you know, listen in. It was before gong calls, right? So you're basically plugging into someone's headset and just really listening to what they did, spending a ton of time like with their training program just to own that, to be able to dig into that as much as I could. And then was really, you know, there was a couple, I remember there was a head of professional services or of partnership programs and Philip, and he kind of took me under his wing along with one other guy and show me kind of like what sales is all about and how to work smart and not, you know, not just working hard, but working smart with it. So that was, you know, a key thing for me. And you know, I think throughout my career, I don't think of myself as the smartest guy in the room by any means, but it's just doing the basics. And, you know, for me, it's like really understanding the math to it. So if you know what, how many calls you need to make to get to it, how many meetings, and then you're building that pipeline, to me, that's something I could focus on. That was something in my control. And so it was all about knowing my numbers inside and out, what I had to do so that if it took me a 100 no's, I knew that the next one was going to be a yes to get me to closer to my sales goals.
And how long was your tenure with WorldCom?
It was about a year.
About a year. Okay. Was it your decision to move on?
It was. I got recruited into another organization that was selling basically local telephone services. And so moving over there, I had like a phenomenal leader, super high energy. The one challenge, though, with that organization is that implementation, it was quite unique, right? So here we were, MCI, it was the breaking of the Ma Bell. Yeah. And so now we're giving them long distance rates that are cheaper than what you could get through Ma Bell. And then when I went over to eSpire, it was a solution where we were breaking away from the traditional telephone and providing an alternative. And of course, a lot of people are unhappy with the alternative or the current solutions. And so it was easy to go in there. We could save them a ton of money. The challenge, though, Paul, that we ran into is that implementation was super long. And what we found it didn't always work. And so as a sales guy, it pulled all my heartstrings, right? Where you didn't sell your friends, your family members. I almost got out of sales as a result of that. And the only way you could sell in good faith was that in 6 months when this thing gets deployed, surely it'll be fixed by that point. And so that was a pretty trying time where I was trying to figure out, like, is this what I want to continue to do? From there, I got recruited over to Sprint, which was obviously a very well-known organization and just had a ton of backing there. And from there, I spent the next 11 years working for Sprint.
You know, I'm curious about the decision to stay within the industry, because I worked at Xerox for about a decade, and that's really where I was first exposed to professional selling and so on. But I didn't know anything about photocopiers and printers before. I didn't wake up in the morning in early 2000s saying, well, I can't wait to sell printers. It was just, I needed a job and I got it. But I remember over my tenure with the company, there were more than one or two occasions when somebody from the other side would reach out to say, hey, why don't you come over here and go over here? And I never did. And I was curious about, for people who stay in the industry, was the grass greener as you kept going? And is it a small industry that you were in, or was it a big industry and it was just totally different? Or was it the same story, different chapter over your 10 or 11 year run at Sprint?
Yeah. So the thing was interesting with Sprint is, I don't know, sometimes I get bored, right? And if I'm doing something, that becomes monotonous, if I'm not growing, if I'm not developing, I get kind of, unplugged and I'm ready for that next thing. And what I found at Sprint is that they had such great education programs. And so I wanted to get into leadership. And they really started investing in me. And so it was like every 1 to 2 to 3 years, right, I was getting the opportunity to move into a new role. And so I think over my career at Sprint, I was in like 5 different roles, had a lot of opportunities to get exposure with the executives, with the CEO, work on some really cool projects. I got out of sales a little bit doing some of these special projects. And at that point, I was like, man, I miss sales. Sales is like the lifeblood. It is so much fun engaging with clients. And so I realized after that, I was like, I got to get back into sales, went back into channel sales, and got back into the same role. I think over Sprint's period, I went to President's Club 4 different years. And so had a lot of success there. I did hit a point though, Paul, where I was like, all right, I kind of want to get out of telco. I want to experience some other things. And, what I found was it was really, really challenging to break away. So I had kind of become that expert in telco. Yeah. And I wanted to get kind of more in software sales. But again, it was kind of that thing. Well, you've got all the experience here. You don't have experience in SaaS. And so it was like all over again, I kind of started feeling this. And I was fortunate in that I was working for a channel partner at the time. I was at Sprint building that Bluefish Wireless out of Indianapolis. And it was a young startup and just saw, 300 to 500% year over year growth there. And eventually they, as having strategy sessions with them, they saw an opportunity that they were 100% tied to Sprint and they really needed to find a way to diversify, because if Sprint pulled the plug on that channel, they were left with nothing. And so they created a software solution that was agnostic to all the carriers. And it was truly software that would help enterprises like in the likes of IBM, JP Morgan Chase, the IRS, to help them to manage all of their mobility devices and infrastructure. And so they brought me on there. And so that was really, I was still in telco, but now I was selling in the software space. And that really was a big pivotal point in my career, where I came on, created a brand new product with the team, built that out, and ended up sticking with that until they were $12, $13 million in revenue.
So during this time, you mentioned Indianapolis in that story there. Were you always based in Kansas still, or had you moved around during your 10, 12 plus years with Sprint?
Yeah. So when we first started at Bluefish, I was working for the first about a year out of Kansas City. And then we really had two different organizations. We had a channel organization, which I was leading. And then we had a direct organization that was like 3x the size of our team. And we were out selling them by a factor of 3 to 1. Okay. And so at that point, the founders of Bluefish were like, oh my gosh, like you guys are doing something really special here. We need to bring this together and bring it as a single organization. And so at that point, I moved up to VP of sales across the direct and channel, and they asked us to move. And so we picked up and moved from Kansas City and moved our three boys and headed out to Indianapolis. And we're there for about 3.5 years.
Did you have to bring your A-game when it comes to selling skills, so selling your wife on making the move?
Yeah, it was a little challenging. All of her family, and she's super, super tight with her family, was all in the Kansas City, Oklahoma area. And so it was, a little challenging there. And, she went with, faith that, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to move up. It's going to be a fun adventure. And so she was a good sport, and we really rolled with it and had a lot of fun, made some great friends there.
So, Steve, what's the timeline here? Give me a range. Mid to late 2000s are we at? And how long did you stay in Indianapolis?
Yes, it was late 2000s. We stayed there for about 3.5 years. Ended up one of our biggest competitors that we were taking away business from left and right was Tango. And they brought on a new CRO. And it was like, man, if they ever get their shit together, they are going to be dangerous because they're the 900-pound gorilla.
Right.
And they saw how much business we were taking away from them. And so they came at me and recruited me away, and I came over there to be VP of sales and to bring some of those insights. And so, and what was interesting is, what was it, a year, 2 years later, they actually acquired Mobi and so brought it under the same umbrella. So,
And so during this time in Indianapolis, was this during the Super Bowl runs with Peyton?
It was. So there was a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
They were competing against my Chiefs, and they had kind of their way with us for many years.
All right. And so the transition, or I guess the acquisition from Tango and Mobi, and so how did you navigate through that?
So, it was a lot of really good experiences, thinking about just how the organization's built, how to position yourself as a leader, how to, build that culture, that sales team, and, really identifying that vision of where we were headed to, because we were aggressively growing, the organization, and, it took, and we didn't have as defined, or I would say, like, as I think about the structure that we have today in place at Accelo, we did a lot of trial and error of trying to after the small business, SDRs. That was really our first introduction into the SDR model. So it was a lot of trial and error, and we probably failed a little bit more than we even had success, but it was like learning a lot of those things. And then as, progressed in my career, I was able to take a lot of those experiences that we learn from and then be able to adapt those to have greater success. Like, for example, we were really focused on the enterprise and mid-market space. As I moved over to mobile solutions, it was really designed for the SMB space. And it really opened up a whole new realm of opportunities because there's so many SMB clients that are out there and no one was targeting them. And so with that, it really took a lot of change as far as process, because like the sales process, the methodology, it had to be super tight because you were doing it with such high repetition. And so we had to really understand and set up the framework for success.
Did you leave on your own or did they package you off?
So at a Tango, I got packaged out and,
Well, that's interesting. I mean, listen, I'm a guy who got packaged off once in my life, and I was 28 years old, living at home, no kids, no wife, nobody in my life. And it was like, I was scared out of my pants. Like, how much money do I have? What am I going to do here? And it was a punch to the gut where it's like, you're getting a check not to come to work tomorrow. Like, we don't even want you. So here's some money, go away.
Yeah.
And it was a real ego shot. And so I'm curious, how did you handle that? Because you're married, you're a father, you got responsibilities, and you've had great successes. And all of a sudden they're telling you, thanks a lot, but we're good. And so how'd you manage that?
Well, it's interesting you ask, Paul, because I think it was 30 days prior to that. My wife, who was had been working throughout and had really been climbing the corporate ladder, and a lot of her friends had kind of departed that organization. And she was ready to leave. And it's like, no, just stick around for package. And right. Literally a week later, she got packaged out. So at this time, she had just been laid off. I got laid off and packaged. And then luckily, as you know, you kind of have to come in with just like, all right, we're, you know, it was definitely a blow to the ego, right? And you're just like, all right, reassess what I want to do, what's best for me and for the organ, you know, for my family. And shortly thereafter, my mother-in-law got really sick and she ended up having cancer. My wife was able to be with her for literally like 2.5 months, the last 2.5 months of her life, be right there at bedside. And so I was able to stay home with the boys, be, you know, Mr. Dad, take care of the family, allow my wife to be there. And so looking back, it was like, you know, it was like sent from God where this was what it was meant to be. And, you know, really took that opportunity while I was out and to really think about what is important for me, what best aligns with my career goals, what kind of organizations do I want to be in? And for me, one of the things that I learned is like being a part of an organization, one that had the private equity investment, because I'd been a part of sales organizations where they were growing off of, you know, everything was funded out of their own back pocket. There was no venture capital, and it took so long to grow. And I wanted to be a part of an organization that had, you know, that opportunity for rapid growth. And so that was one of the key, you know, factors for me, being an organization, you know, I want to continue to learn. You know, I can't recall where I heard it, but it's like, if you're ever in an organization where you're not learning, you're not being challenged, and that could be up or down, it's time to move on. Right. And I related a lot to like the great coaches, you know, Coach K, like people go there because they want to know that if you want to be the best, you want to learn from the best.
Yeah.
And so it's all about surrounding yourself around really great team members to help you to grow, to mature, to challenge you, and great things can come from that. And so I think, you know, obviously I've been through a lot of trials, tribulations, have learned how to, you know, obtain a lot of grit and to allow some of the things just to kind of roll up your shoulders, because in sales, look, every day it's a grind, right? But you look at the things, the positive side of it and the impact you're able to make. And as a leader, you know, it's all about, look, we work a ton of hours. We probably work more hours, right, than we do with our families. And so you want to make those hours count. You want to enjoy them. You want to get out of bed each and every day, just being excited about where you're going. And for me as a leader, that's what I want to do for my organization now. For my team, it's all about developing them, helping them to grow so that they can eventually take over my role or being an opportunity to be a VP of sales and really just investing in them. And you know, I guess that's really what gets me out of bed today. Each and every day is that opportunity to really develop, invest, and then obviously, you know, see that rapid growth with the organization and return to shareholders as well.
You know, Steve, it's great to hear that, you know, the scenario where both you and your wife find yourself, you know, out of work technically, and now there's change happening, what's going to happen next. And I'm glad to hear that at least there was a positive where your wife was able to spend some time with her mom, you know, pretty consistently before she passed away. And so that's great to hear. How long was your gap between jobs? Did you take some additional time? I know that, you know, you're being a father and you managed through personal with your mother-in-law and so on, but was there a long gap between? Were you looking during this process? And I'm curious about, did you run into scenarios where, like you ran into earlier in your career, where you don't have experience in this arena, so we're not going to look at you after all the years you've put in up until this point?
Yeah. So I think the gap was somewhere around 4 or 5 months. And I actually, through another organization, Mobile Solutions, when I came on a couple of years later, we got brought on to really create the motion of the sales machine. went through another private equity transaction, and they literally exited the executive team there, brought three organizations together, brought an entire new executive leadership team. And so there it was probably again about 5 months. And so it does take some time as a, you know, if you're in a VP of sales role to find the right organization.
Right.
Yes, there were plenty of opportunities where I could have started the job, you know, a week later, but it wasn't really aligned with my goals. And so I was looking, you know, like, all right, is this my opportunity to get more into SaaS based? And again, I ran into a lot of resistance there. I ended up just really leveraging my network, reaching out and saying, look, you know, you guys are trying to make entrance into the US market. Here's an opportunity for me to come on to show how we can build that out with mobile solutions in between that gap and Accelo. Luckily, I had a one of our private equity guys that was our lead board member at Mobile Solutions, had a lot of discussions with him. And he was like, look, let me bring you into one of my businesses. And he actually introduced me into Accelo. And so he was the one that for the first, you know, last 20 plus years, I've been in telco. And it was through his recommendation that he got me recommended in here, where I was now no longer the expert in my field, and truly was just bringing that go-to-market playbook, the energy, the culture of building a winning sales team. And so it was a really, you know, challenging, you know, opportunity. It was like one of those things where you had to look yourself in the mirror and you're like, all right, you're ready to go. Like, you're no longer the guy that knows all the insights. And so I had to really rely on my team members to, from a technology perspective, and bring focus on the playbook. So it was really, really cool. But, you know, it did, like, while I had some SaaS experience throughout my career, it was this opportunity that really gave me that first opportunity where I was outside of the industry completely.
And is that when you made the move to Denver?
So we actually had moved, made a move prior to that. I was working for an Israeli company and could live anywhere. And so we're like, what are we doing here in Indiana now? Let's go over to Denver, which has been a lifelong dream. And we actually got 23 family members, maybe 24 now with another baby that no one's from here. And we've all just kind of relocated here. And so it's right next to my sisters and nieces. And so absolutely loving it here. So
and you got all your Chief swag up in your office, right? I'm sure. And, you know,
I do. There's a lot of smack talk going on. There's, you know, a lot of hope with the Broncos this year. So we'll see how it plays out.
And so when did you join Accelo?
It's a little over 2 years ago.
All right. So a little over 2 years ago, that is right when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about that. So did you join before? Was it right on the cusp or even after?
It was right when we were in lockdown. You know, interestingly, I had another opportunity that was working. So I had two different opportunities that I was working. And the other one, I went out to Boston, met with the guys. And it was literally right when COVID like was coming out. And remember, a guy from Boston Consulting was in the building, had COVID, it shut down the entire building, and it put a halt on the hiring there. And so, but fortunately with Accelo, you know, they were like, look, we need a leader. We're not going to let this slow us down at all. And so I recall my private equity guy, my CEO and I, we closed the deal at City Park. Because we couldn't be inside, and we met at like a park bench, and it was like this weird deal of either like a CIA deal or a drug deal that was going on, you know, because we're sitting around a picnic table and orchestrating the deal. So it was quite unique. And from there, you know, I had a team of seven, and we built it out to a team of 30. And, you know, for the first year, had no interaction with my team other than through Zoom.
Right.
We had to do all of our training. Everything was built around being in the office, all of our training. And so we had to re-engineer everything so that we could see success in the new COVID world.
And yet during that time, if I heard you correctly, your company actually grew headcount.
We did. So we were in the business of rapidly growing and building out. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I was just at a conference last week and we're talking about just the impacts and how to stay connected and the great year of resignation. And, you know, it really requires as leaders, as executives, we can't just use the same playbook we've always used. We've got to do something differently. How we look at engaging with our members, how we bring value, how we, you know, just stay connected and how the team can be connected. And so, we, you know, we did a couple different things that we put in place. We would do like Mondays. It was, we called it Motivation Mondays. And we had the different team members that would take a Monday. They'd work on a topic, what motivates them. And so they would talk about different things. And then Wednesdays we would do training. Fridays we'd make it fun Fridays and playing games. And it was great because the interactions, while I wasn't able to sit across and have coffee with people or have lunch or sales meetings, we were doing these things. And the intention was to build the culture. And, you know, let me tell you, with some of these games we were playing on Fridays, it was like get people all riled up and see the competitive juices and spirits. And it just built that culture to where when we were finally able to connect, other than not knowing how tall they were or what they looked like from weight, you know, chest down, we knew each other. And so that was really cool that we were able to build upon that and still have tremendous success, go from flatline growth to seeing year over year growth, you know, throughout the organization.
You know, Steve, you've had quite the run. I really appreciate you sharing your story here. I mean, if we go back to your early days in Kansas, you go to MSU thinking finance because that was in your DNA with your dad, banking, and then you, you know, you experience, you know, pretty significant family tragedy, I should say, and then you manage through that. And then you find sales during college and you achieve some success. Then you get into telco for like a lifetime. And then out of the blue, you and your wife find yourself both out of work at the same time. You've got three boys and you realize, okay, well, we can work anywhere. We moved to Denver, figure it out. And then you join an organization right at the heart of a pandemic where we're all trying to figure this out. So congrats on everything you've been able to create up until this point. I just have one more question for you.
All right.
How are the Chiefs going to do this year?
Oh boy.
Because they were a part of what I think is one of, if not the greatest football games I've ever seen last year against the Bills. And they've got a great talent. I mean, Mahomes is ridiculous. And so, but the AFC is going to be tough this year. Burrow is the real deal. Allen is the real deal. It's going to be exciting in the AFC, but how are they going to do?
Well, I will tell you, Paul, with the announcement of Hill being traded, I called my boys and told them that I was traveling in San Diego and literally they had tears, right? So in our household, it's pretty serious. You know, I think definitely won't look the same as what we've done, but, you know, the AFC West is going to be tough. You know, it is the NFL. Anything can happen, but I feel good. I'm putting them back in that championship game and getting a win there. So we'll see how it goes. Fingers crossed. Nice.
Well, listen, from this Cowboys fan to you, I hope maybe I see you in the Super Bowl.
Hey, I would love to see the Cowboys there. I've been rooting on them. They were my childhood team.
Yeah, well, they're my team, have been forever. It's been a long time since we were in college in the 90s when they were winning stuff. So they're long overdue. Well, listen, Steve, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate the time and you sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, everybody, let's wrap it up right now. Remember, as I say, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. And for my guest, Steve, let's go Chiefs. We'll be right back.